from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. American privacy law, rooted in the U.S. Constitution, focuses on the threat of unreasonable search and seizure by the government. Exhibit A these days, the NSA. But my guest today says the country's founders and drafters could not have imagined the search power, the invasions of privacy made possible for private companies in the internet age. It's time, says Jeffrey Rosen, to rein those in. This hour on Point, beyond the NSA, protecting American privacy from private companies, they call for constitutional protection. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. If private companies collect big data, won't the government end up getting it? Will the internet age work economically if the Constitution would one day rein in private data collection? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. It's not as if the NSA is the only one out there collecting data. It's very much in the air lately, especially since it's come to light that the NSA, through its PRISM program, has been reported as having tapped in, Edward Snowden bringing this to light, tapped in to a lot of the data resources of commercial operators. All the way back in 2008, before all that, here was Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg talking about privacy concerns on CBS's 60 Minutes with Leslie Stahl. Here's Zuckerberg. You'll hear Stahl in the background.
It's a really important thing for everyone to just be thinking about. I mean, privacy and making sure that people have control over their information is, I think, one of the most fundamental things on the internet.
And yet, these companies are dipping very deeply into our private data, our personal information. The president talked about that last week when he gave his big speech on U.S. intelligence programs after the NSA leaks. He said that people have concerns about private companies as well as the government.
The challenges to our privacy do not come from government alone. Corporations of all shapes and sizes track what you buy, store and analyze our data, and use it for commercial purposes. That's how those targeted ads pop up on your computer and your smartphone periodically. But all of us understand that the standards for government surveillance must be higher.
The government surveillance. But should we have some kind of standards for private surveillance? These companies are very sensitive about this. Last May, Google CEO Larry Page spoke at Google's annual developer conference. He was taking questions from the audience, and here he is answering a question about Google's policies toward free speech and privacy. This is before the Snowden revelations.
We're working very hard on that, making sure we're protecting your private information, making sure that we're ensuring computer security, which is required to make sure we're protecting your freedom of speech and your private information as part of that, and making sure we're being as transparent as we can about the requests we get from government and things like that.
Things became a lot more transparent within weeks when Edward Snowden brought his leaked revelations to light about the government tapping in to the services, the data of Google and others. Joining me now from Philadelphia is Jeffrey Rosen, professor of law at George Washington University, president, chief executive of the National Constitution Center, legal affairs editor at The New Republic. He wrote in this Sunday's New York Times an opinion piece headlined "Madison's Privacy Blind Spot," as in James Madison, arguing for a constitutional amendment to rein in tech companies' surveillance, you might say. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Jeffrey Rosen, welcome back to On Point.
It's great to be back, Tom.
This was a really interesting meditation on Madison, our Constitution, the founders' perspective on privacy, and I want to delve into all of that with you, but take us, if you'd be good enough, to your bottom line first. You say, what we may now need is a constitutional amendment to prohibit unreasonable search and seizure of our persons and electronic effects, whether by the government or by private corporations. Why do you think we need now to rope private companies into this constitutional language?
This entire proposal was sparked by a memorable line in Judge Richard Leon's opinion striking down NSA surveillance. He wrote that James Madison, who cautioned us to beware of the abridgment of freedom of the people by the gradual and silent encroachments by those in power, would be aghast. And I just started to think, well, when you try to figure out who the people in power are, people who have power over our privacy and free speech, it's not just the government, It's lawyers at Facebook and Google and Twitter. These people have more control over who can speak and who can be heard and whose data can be surveilled and for how long than any king or president or Supreme Court justice. So it struck me that Madison, who was so properly concerned with limiting power and was a moderate on these issues, to the degree that he was concerned about general warrants, which are unlimited searches that allow people in power to rummage through a huge amount of private data in the search for needles and haystacks, basically he would have been just as concerned about Google as the government. The indignity of a general warrant is that it revealed an awful lot of innocent information in the course of a fishing expedition for a tiny bit of guilty information. And now that Google can trace us 24/7 for a month and follow our movements, to the degree that the Supreme Court has said that that's impermissible when conducted by the police, it doesn't make sense that it would be okay when conducted by Google.
But if you look back to Madison's time, Jeffrey, as you remind us there, that revolutionary period, they were, you know, their hair was on fire here because you had these general warrants, writs of assistance that allowed the king's agents to, quoting here, break open doors, chests, trunks, and other packages without specifying what they were seizing or what would be searched. But that is clearly against people's will or not with their permission. In this tech company age, most people are checking little boxes that say to these companies, you can do this.
You know, that's a good point, and it's a point made by the judge, Judge Pauly, who upheld the NSA surveillance program. He said people voluntarily surrender personal and private information to transnational corporations which exploit the data for profit. Few think twice about it. So I think it's right that people do surrender the information, but they do not expect to be tracked 24/7 for a month on the basis of the information. And both polls and common sense suggest that when people are surrendering data for one purpose, namely to get an app or to get some iTunes music, they don't expect that that involves permission to look at all their private data for all purposes. And just when you pose the thought experiment, do you believe that it's okay for Google to track your movements 24/7 for a month using geolocational information to follow you from door to door and know everywhere you've been, people are just as appalled by the prospect of that search as they are by an NSA search. So to the degree that Judge Leon was concerned about 24/7 surveillance because it can reveal so much about us, our political associations, our sexual habits, our intimate thoughts, it doesn't really make any difference whether the person who's doing the searching is Google or the government. What complicates it further, of course, is the question of where the data is going to be held. The President's Commission on Intelligence Reform suggested that all the phone data continue to be collected but be stored by private companies. Now, the companies have resisted it. They don't want that responsibility. But merely shifting the ownership of the data from the public to the private sector doesn't in any way address the concerns about privacy and dignity that are getting people concerned about in the first place. So I think the Europeans understand this a lot better. They have constitutional protections for dignity that constrain private data gathering as well as government data gathering. We don't have those protections, mostly because of the legacy of Madison, a great libertarian who was focused on abuses, in particular by Congress. He wasn't able to anticipate the growth of the Leviathan national security state and was less worried about the executive, but was quite, very concerned about protecting private property. He believed that the preservations of people's different and unequal faculties of acquiring property is the first purpose of government. He had a fascinating debate with Thomas Jefferson and anti-federalists about whether to sponsor an anti-monopoly amendment. Some of the economic populists among the anti-federalists wanted to prohibit Congress from establishing any monopoly or any company with exclusive privileges of commerce. Madison didn't like monopolies either, but he was less concerned about them because he thought the greater danger in a democracy where the people rule would be that the few, namely the monopolists, would be have their property attacked by the many. So he was less concerned about monopolies. And as a result, the Bill of Rights binds the government, does not bind the corporate sector. And now that the corporate sector has as much power of the government to invade privacy, I think we have a constitutional problem.
Jeffrey, you were just saying there that people, Americans, I guess, are just as appalled by the idea of Google geolocation and tracking as they would be by the NSA. I'm not so sure that's true these days. People have surrendered an awful lot of sense of privacy. I'm not sure they're appalled. What's the danger that you're pointing to here with private commercial tracking, surveillance, data gathering on Americans' lives?
You know, I love to give an example when I talk about privacy. I was at Google a few years ago at a conference, and the head of public policy said he imagined within a few years, Google and Facebook would be asked to put live and online all of the public and private surveillance cameras in the world. And now that Google Glass is recording our interactions in public spaces and the drone cameras can follow us from door to door, it's really not science fiction to imagine that if all of these camera feeds were integrated and put on Google, you could click on to Google or Facebook, zoom in on anyone in the world, you know, say me, back click on me to see where I came from, forward click to see where I'm going later, and basically reconstruct my movements 24/7 for a month, you know, at any time in the world. And you could do that to anyone. When I give that possibility to people, and I'd love to hear what callers think about it, I don't get a single, you know, it's usually every hand goes up and says that that would be unreasonable and invasive. And why? It's because people believe that there should be a degree of partial anonymity and obscurity in public.
What if Google says, or whoever might be doing that, look, it's not the government tracking you, it's just us, and we're just doing it so we can throw, you know, free pizza deals up on a screen near you.
Well, think about the value that the framers are concerned about protecting when they were worried about practical obscurity in public. They thought political dissent was important. They thought people wouldn't be spontaneous, creative, eccentric, wouldn't break the norm if they could be tracked, you know, by having their private papers examined. The kind of tracking that could take place on Google would chill far more political expression and individuality than any general warrant for a search. And again, it really doesn't matter whether it's Google or the government.
Jeffrey Rosen, hold the thought right there. We're talking about a constitutional amendment on privacy and private companies. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about American privacy and private companies beyond the NSA, asking, do we need a constitutional amendment to protect us from Google and all the rest and their massive data collection? Jeffrey Rosen says, maybe we do. Professor of Law at George Washington University, head of the National Constitution Center, his piece in the Sunday Times looked at James Madison, the founder's view of privacy, how they could not have imagined the power and reach of private companies to intrude on our private details today. You can link to all that at our website, onpointradio.org. A lot of people wondering about this. I mean, all the focus on the NSA, and yet private companies have as much or maybe much more information voluntarily surrendered these days, or maybe sometimes not so voluntarily, we just don't think about it, and they've got it. In December of last year, here was Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg again. Here he was talking with CBS News' Ben Tracy about how he said the government had really blown it after the NSA leaks. And here's Zuckerberg first, then Tracy.
I think that the government has really blown it on this because they haven't done a good job of explaining the data that they're trying to ask for and how they're using it.
You've had a lot of experience at Facebook with users complaining about how their data might be used.
I mean, people care immensely about their data and their content and, you know, want to make sure that it's shared with only the people that they want it to be shared with. And at Facebook, we've tried to be really good stewards of that.
Yeah, well, maybe, but good enough? Hard to say. Jeffrey Rosen says, collectively, private companies have an awful lot of sway and access to your data. Too much, he says. Time for a constitutional amendment on this side of the ledger. I mean, you're not the only one who's been slapping their forehead a little bit lately, Jeffrey, with all the concern over the NSA at the volume of data that private companies have in comparison to what the NSA has on us.
Surely not. And I think people recognize that the idea of unchecked power was not the philosophy of the American founders. It's not a knock against any company in particular. It's just that 22-year-olds in flip-flops and T-shirts, who are often the people making the decisions about when to release the data and who can speak and who can be heard, are not really appropriate stewards for our most basic constitutional values. So, you know, there are many drafts of different kinds of amendments we can have. There's legitimate grounds for a debate about what exactly should be constrained and what shouldn't. But I think everyone understands that the values that the framers were trying to protect are threatened just as much by the private sector as by government today.
But would an amendment like this just bring down the U.S. economy, which is now so woven onto the Internet? And the Internet has so much to do with private data. That's the kind of the basis of the business model of an awful lot of the most successful internet companies, Jeffrey.
Well, it's a great question. So let's imagine what an amendment might look like. The simplest amendment I could imagine would just extend the language of the Fourth Amendment into an electronic age and into the private sector. So it would say something like, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, and electronic effects shall not be violated by the government or the private sector against unreasonable searches and seizures. So it's and then it would be up to courts and Congress and the companies themselves to decide what an unreasonable search and seizure is. And you might say that an unreasonable search and seizure is what the Supreme Court has said when the government does it, that 24/7 tracking for a month is an unreasonable search and seizure. Well, the companies are saying they're not doing that right now, and they have no need to do that because of their business model. So under an amendment like that, they would remain free to send us targeted ads, and it wouldn't bring down the whole business model. And I'm certainly not trying to suggest that no data collection take place, just that the kind of outrageous and unreasonable surveillance that everyone agrees is impermissible should be prohibited.
You know,
so I that's my thought.
I mean, I'm not sure you're dealing with a land of James Madison's here anymore. And I think a lot of people might still check that little box, even if private companies said, we're going to take all this data and we're going to keep track of you 24 hours a day, but don't worry, it's just for, you know, good deals on the next pair of flip-flops you buy. Is there an opt-out here where could citizens still say, I get Jeffrey Rosen's concern, but I'm checking this box that says track me anywhere because I want that internet convenience?
That's a great question, and I think you're absolutely right. People will trade their privacy in exchange for a toaster or, you know, a small discount. And the truth is that if you believe, as the Europeans do, that privacy is a kind of unalienable right, that the right to human dignity and liberty, the right against being tracked 24/7, is fundamental to our dignity as human beings, then it's not something you can opt out of. It's a constraint on the companies, and even if someone says, I'm an exhibitionist, I'd love to be tracked 24/7 and put myself on the internet, the Europeans would say they shouldn't be allowed to do that.
We invited Google onto this show to talk about this. They are not eager to do it. I'm not so sure that they would see their business model holding up here. Jeffrey Rosen, though, raises a very interesting and deep issue about privacy when so much is collected. We're people up in arms about the NSA. Look around, folks, at what private tech companies are collecting. Shannon is calling from Guthrie, Oklahoma. Shannon, thanks for calling. What do you think? You're on the air.
My thought was, if people don't agree with what Google is doing, don't use Google.
Simple as that. Appreciate it, Shannon. Jeffrey, what do you say?
You know, it's a good point. I think the response is that opting out of Google is like opting out of civilization. We could all be hermits and live in sheds and cook our food on fires, but that's not really a practical option for full participation in civic life in America today. So in practice, we can't opt out of the internet and be full citizens and shouldn't have to, and therefore the companies that run the internet should respect constitutional values in the same way the government does.
Boy, that's a tough call right now, but I can see the concern. Oliver in Marquette, Michigan. Oliver, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
In today's society, let's use the arrogance of Facebook, for example, where we need to let the world know what we're doing at each and every given moment, or when we change when we're doing something. Isn't it our responsibility as users to not use it if we don't want that information to be tracked? How is it that I can dictate what a private company does or doesn't do with information when I use them, when I give them my mailing address?
Well, why not? I mean, you know, there's a constitution that governs a lot of things in our country, Oliver. Jeffrey Rosen is saying in Europe, they're much tougher on what companies can collect because that's what they've collectively decided. I mean, he's saying we got to collectively decide something new in this country on the Constitution. How about it?
Well, I understand that, and point well taken. But first of all, at the risk of sounding arrogant myself,
Yeah. We're
not in Europe. We're in the United States of America. and there is a fundamental difference between what private companies do and how they advertise and how they sell, how they live, and what government does and what government has access to and can gather on their citizens.
Yeah.
If I Google clothing sales, or if I Google adult movies, I automatically know that that information is going to be stored somewhere. It's my responsibility to make the decision of whether or not I'm going to create that record by either participation or non-participation. And let's face it, What are these companies going to do with that information after they gather it? Are they going to prosecute me? Are they going to take away some of my freedoms? I would be willing to bet that 99% of the time, all they're really looking to do is sell me something.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. And that's definitely the status that we've started at. And I'm not saying, you know, hey, I'm not pushing one way or the other here, but okay, we're not European, you know, cheese eating surrender monkeys and all that. But Oliver, do you think the founders imagined a situation in which private companies had so much information about American citizens in their hands?
Absolutely not. I mean, it would be ludicrous to even think that they had an idea of what the internet may or may not be, or what the word internet even meant, or how it was spelled. However, they did create the foundation for which people, entrepreneurs, could create companies, could advertise and sell their products, their wares, and I think ultimately that's what this is about. This isn't about government intrusion. Or let me spin this in another direction.
Okay.
If I felt strongly enough that Google was mining people's data, well, instead of dictating what they do, maybe I need to buy the company and change the rules. When I'm an owner, then I have every right to dictate what that company does.
Yeah, that's a lot of clout for the owner. And Oliver, you must be loaded if you're going to buy Google. I can't do it. I really appreciate your call, though, from Marquette, Michigan. Jeffrey Rosen, James Madison would understand exactly what Oliver's saying here. As you describe, Madison being ready to give private entities a lot of leeway.
Absolutely. I think Oliver made a bunch of fascinating points. And Madison did believe that the preservation of people's different and unequal faculties of acquiring property was the first object of government, he said in Federalist.
Because he was afraid in a democracy the mass would just overrun the property of the few.
Absolutely. He was looking at things like Shays' Rebellion in mm-hmm. Western Massachusetts, where debtors were having riots and to prevent paying off their debts to creditors. So he was absolutely, when he talked about the tyranny of the majority, he was centrally concerned about the preservation of property rights, which he thought was the foundation of all freedom. So, you know, he would have sympathized with Oliver. On the other hand, he and the other framers had a special concern about monopolies. They believed that individual business owners should be able to, you know, have trades, but that when a certain company got too big, it would serve its own interests and not the public good. So he was a moderate on the property question, as on all these other questions. I thought Oliver also made a very good point about, you know, you can just use the internet responsibly. You don't have to allow yourself to be tracked. But as we all know, many of these devices are used in ways that we can't opt out of. Our cell phones are tracking devices that record our movements 24/7, and then our geolocational records are stored in third-party databases owned by AT&T and Verizon. And the Supreme Court has just agreed to decide whether some of our cell phone data is protected or not, but according to current doctrine, once I walk down the street and emit my geolocational records, I'm voluntarily surrendering them to a third party and lose all expectation of privacy in it. That can't make sense, and that's not consistent with what the framers would have said. So I think this whole idea, it's true that we're America, we're not Europe, we don't like to talk about dignity, we like to talk about liberty, but it just doesn't seem consistent with founding values to give me no way of walking down the street without being tracked 24/7 just because of the way the devices are designed.
Let's come back to the danger, though, if I may. I mean, Oliver touches on this from Michigan. Bradley writes to us on Facebook, so he's part of the Borg there. He says, the difference between Google having our private info and the government having it is that Google does not have the IRS, jails, and an army. So why worry, Jeffrey?
True. If the government knows I attended a Rand Paul rally, you know, they can audit your tax returns. If AT&T knows, the argument goes, it just sends you ads for Tea Party Tax Day protests. I mean, here I think we really do have to return to my hero, Justice Louis Brandeis, the greatest defender of privacy in the 20th century. And he equated the right to be let alone with offenses against honor and dignity. And he would have recognized that when every step I take on and offline is recorded, so an algorithm can predict if I'm a terrorist or a customer, I'm being objectified, stereotyped, not treated as an individual worthy of equal concern and respect. Now, maybe that's too abstract. And maybe
it's too highfalutin. Maybe Americans just don't roll with that. Honor and dignity, they want their convenience. I'm not hearing the danger. Brandeis might well see a danger, but Oliver is not hearing a danger here.
All right, here's the danger. Judge Leon recognized the danger, mm-hmm. and so did the president's intelligence report. They basically said, once the data is collected by private companies, it's going to leak out. regardless of the constraints that are put on it, and they're not very strong at the current moment.
Leak to whom?
It's going to be hacked. It's going to be seized by people who want to do us ill. And the danger is that, you know, whether it's in a divorce trial or, you know, just a leak that ends up on the Internet, all of our movements and all of our most intimate thoughts and associations are going to become public. And our ability to control how much of our thoughts, emotions, and sensations are communicated to others, which I think people do feel is a, mm-hmm. a fundamental right, is going to be threatened by the mere fact that this data is aggregated and collected in one place, even if it's held by the private sector. That's the danger, and I think people should be afraid of it.
Leak out or just be seized by the government. Of course, that's what the PRISM, this revelation of what the PRISM program is suggesting that they're already doing. Let's go to New York. Potsdam, New York. Sue is calling. Hi, Sue. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi. What do you think?
I agree with your speaker completely. I think this has been a 10-year story. I think data collection by private companies has been going on since the Internet started, and the government has not done anything to protect that data. When I called my congressman 5 years ago to find out how JPMorgan Chase was collecting the data and using it on its food stamp delivery program, I got no response because my congressman did not understand data privacy.
Maybe they don't care. Why wouldn't he care?
Because I was... This was probably the beginning of my tenure of paranoia, but I was seeing when you did specific Internet searches on data, like food stamps, child support, your interest rate on your credit card would suddenly go up. There were certain things that were happening. Our government did nothing to protect the U.S. economy. This was happening then. It's happening now. And given that data is currency, and given the free rein that the finance industry has, how can we expect our government to protect us? They aren't, and they have no deep understanding of it. Look at what Amazon just rolled out. They're going to start delivering products to you in anticipation of how you're going to buy. I mean, data mining is happening.
Sue, I appreciate your call. Jeffrey Rosen, Sue says, where are you going to find allies here, Jeffrey? The companies won't support you. This is their new currency, data. Government won't go after this, maybe in part because they imagine one day they can tap into this data themselves and put it to their own purposes. Where are your allies here, Jeffrey?
Well, I think Sue is right, and the allies may be few and far between. The truth is there are allies, and it's a bipartisan coalition, when it comes to opposing government surveillance. And there are libertarian conservatives and civil libertarian liberals who are appalled by NSA surveillance, and the judges who are striking it down are both Republican and Democratic, and I think that's a great thing. But the truth is, Sue is right, that the same libertarian conservatives who oppose mass data gathering by the government are more reluctant to regulate the private sector because they share both a Madisonian devotion to property rights and a Jeffersonian anti-federalist suspicion of regulation. And that's really what distinguishes America from Europe. In Europe, there's more of a constituency, more allies for regulation of the private sector, and here it tends to be more suspicion of the government. So I think Sue is right that in terms of getting laws passed, it may well be an uphill battle.
Sue says data is the new currency. I mean, if that's true, and it feels as though she's right, how do you put a whole currency back in the bottle without wrecking the economy that's been built around it?
I do really believe that protecting constitutional values does not have to be inconsistent with a robust economy. This is not an argument against capitalism in any way. Remember, I'm trying to channel Madison, who was devoted to the capitalist system, to private property, but was just so balanced about recognizing you needed a government strong enough to protect property rights, but not so strong that it threatened liberties. So if we can all be Madisonian in channeling that balance, I think prohibiting the most extreme, outrageous, and intrusive forms of surveillance, whether by the government or by AT&T, while still allowing the companies to use the data they need to keep their business model alive, is an attainable goal.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American privacy and private companies beyond the NSA, asking, do we need a constitutional amendment to protect us from Google and all the rest and their massive data collection? Jeffrey Rosen, professor of law at George Washington University, says maybe so, and maybe soon. He joins us today from Philadelphia. With us right now from Arlington, Virginia, is Adam Thier, Senior Research Fellow at the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Washington University. He's been reading Jeffrey Rosen alongside the rest of us and thinking about these big issues before and beyond that. Adam Thier, thank you very much for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. Nice to be back. I'm with George Mason University, by the way.
Oh, excuse me. George Mason. I meant to say it. Forgive me if I didn't.
Okay.
What do you think of Jeffrey Rosen's argument? We may need a constitutional amendment here, Adam.
Yeah, I don't think we need an amendment. I think your callers have done a very nice job picking apart one problem with Jeff's logic here, which is that private entities are simply not the same as government entities. I mean, obviously, as one of your callers said, governments can tax and fine and jail us. Private companies cannot. And Jeff said something about opting out of Google and these companies is like opting out of civilization. Nothing could be further from the truth. True, hundreds of millions of people use services like Twitter, Facebook, and Google, but hundreds of millions of people do not use them and get along just fine. So I hope we can put to bed the idea that these two things are the same or should be treated the same. We can and should limit government collection and surveillance powers. That's why we have the Fourth Amendment. That should not be applied to private companies.
Why not?
This is why. Because the biggest problem with Jeff's logic is that he is essentially proposing privacy paternalism. He is attempting to impose his privacy preferences on the rest of us in the form of a constitutional amendment. A constitutional amendment is a big deal. It's a sweeping pronouncement that says this shall be the law of the land and there shall be no exception.
Yeah, but wait a minute. We have a Bill of Rights. We already have, if you want to call the Bill of Rights paternalism, these are guarantees from above that we've agreed to. I mean, what's the difference if you only apply it to government or you also apply it?
The difference, Tom, is that privacy is a highly subjective value, and not everyone shares the same privacy values. Some of us are very willing to trade our data in exchange for various types of services. And that happens every single day in our economy, and Professor Rosen should not be taking that right away from us. And yet he just said on this phone call a moment ago that he would take away that right from individuals to make that choice for themselves. What is that if not paternalistic?
But do you think that the entire Constitution is paternalism then? I mean, we do come to collective decisions about this.
The Constitution and the Bill of Rights generally empowers us to make our own choices. It gives us freedoms. It leaves us at liberty to do these things. It puts constraints on government's ability to impose coercive mandates on us. These companies are not the same as the government. The Bill of Rights applies to government, not to private corporations.
But the Founding Fathers, Adam, could they anticipate the power of data collection, surveillance, if you will, the private companies would one day have?
Well, maybe they couldn't. They couldn't anticipate probably a lot of things about the modern economy, and it doesn't mean we shouldn't have some laws governing some of these things. But a constitutional amendment that is so sweeping in its effect to say that essentially you cannot have this form of data collection and individuals are not even allowed to agree to consent to these deals is something that is an antithetical to the freedoms we enjoy in our constitutional republic. Moreover, I would add that the very first of the amendments to our Constitution is really America's prime information policy, which is the First Amendment, which basically says information should flow freely. Jeff's proposal would directly contradict that and impose serious constraints on the ability of many institutions, let's say even like NPR, or the Washington Post Company, or the New York Times, where he published his piece, are they going to have restrictions on their ability to gather information freely? I mean, this is a sweeping issue, a constitutional amendment. I don't think Jeff thought this proposal all the way through.
Jeffrey Rosen, take this step, follow through on this, and we're not Americans anymore. We've lost the core freedom of what it means to be an American, is Adam's suggestion.
I think it's amusing to hear a libertarian or a conservative suggest that it's paternalistic to enforce natural rights that come from God and not government. All of the founders believed that we have certain basic rights of liberty that inhere in us, regardless of whether a government gives them to us or not, and that they can't be constrained in certain ways by the government or the private sector. The amendment that Madison unsuccessfully proposed as a preamble to the Bill of Rights said that all people have basic natural rights, including the enjoyment of life and liberty and pursuing and obtaining happiness and safety. And those natural rights, I think, have to be guaranteed against private as well as public invasions. He also very much misstates my proposal. To call it constitutional amendment paternalistic is, of course, amusing, since it would require proposal by two-thirds of both houses of Congress and ratification by three-quarters of the state legislatures. But more importantly, I explicitly did not propose preventing data collection or targeting ads or bringing down the free market system. I said only the most outrageous and intrusive forms of surveillance that everyone Republican and Democratic alike agree are unreasonable searches and seizures, whether conducted by Google or the government, would be prohibited. So I'm talking about 24/7 surveillance for a month. I'm not talking about not sending people ads. Finally, it's just, you know, invoking the First Amendment brings the point home. Who is the person right now in this country who has more power over who can speak and who can be heard than anyone else? It's not a Supreme Court justice. It's not President Obama. It's those young lawyers at Google and Facebook who decided not to remove the Innocence of the Muslims video in the face of demands by President Obama that had come down. In retrospect, they made better decisions about free speech than the President of the United States did. And to pretend that we can just not, you know, we can opt out of Google and we can speak perfectly well in an age when our actual access to information depends on whether or not something is on YouTube or not, is just ignoring reality.
I'm not ready to judge this right here, but I do have to say, in a time when many people are up in arms about what the NSA is surveilling, you look at what private companies are collecting, and it would seem to me a day in and day out to dwarf what the NSA's got. I'll bring it to you, Adam. Let me get a couple callers here. Saad in Los Angeles, California. Saad, good to hear from you. You're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. My question is for Professor Rosen, who, by the way, I just finished listening to an audio course that he gave on exactly this topic, and I greatly enjoyed it and I learned a lot from. My question is, I'm a physician, and we're now forced, and I have to underline being forced, to transfer all our patients' medical records and data into an electronic medical system, which pretty soon is going to be integrated as one big system where everybody can have access to, including insurance companies, Google, and big companies.
Okay.
Now, here the customer or the patient is not checking a box agreeing to the release of their information or data. What protections are there going to be for the patients here from these big corporations and companies?
Of just going in and even getting the most personal medical information. Adam Thier, what about it? I mean, are we in new territory here, or we have to reconsider what liberty requires?
Well, we certainly are in new territory, and of course we adapt and we have new social norms that govern what is private and what is not. I mean, Jeff spends a lot of time praising Justice Brandeis, one of his heroes on this front, but Justice Brandeis over 100 years ago wrote probably the most famous article on privacy ever written, and it was very much concerned and wringing his hands over what we were going to do about the Kodak camera. And we answered, we're going to buy one. I mean, the camera was something we integrated into our lives, and we changed our societal norms to adapt to it. That's, again, the subjective nature of privacy. One day it's creepy, the next day it's cool and a must-have killer app. So we do have to understand that society does adapt over time, and we don't want a sweeping pronouncement from above that says, thou shall never be allowed to collect this data, because after all, it has many beneficial purposes. Jeff's all worried about so-called tracking on location-based services.
So-called? Right? I mean, you can do real tracking.
Those services allow us to have mapping services that are freely available to allow us to see the traffic in real time on every road in a major city in America. I think that's something that many of us are going to want and to continue to demand, even if it means our wireless services are retaining certain amount of data about our whereabouts.
I mean, that's what makes it interesting, that there's so many efficiencies and conveniences that come from this, and yet Jeffrey writes, America needs a robust debate about all this to meet the exigencies of our electronic age. A debate certainly seems reasonable here. This is a changing reality. Michael in Boston, you're on the air, Michael.
Yes, well, the government paternalistically doesn't allow me to sell myself into slavery. I'd also like to attack the distinction being made between private and public. Google may not have an army or the IRS or the police, but I'm sure they have very good friends in all those places. And on the other side, if Google collects a lot of information, it's one subpoena, or for that matter, bankruptcy filing, away from being released information the government can get. Quite frankly, private corporations are state creations, and they are not really part of the free market. So all the free market arguments in the favor of the rights of these artificial persons are not really good.
But Michael, can you imagine how we could draw a line here that would let our digital era economy roll on with the conveniences that people want and often expect, and offer this new layer of protection to privacy?
I think we're very clever, and just as the gentleman from George Mason says, that we can adapt to increased loss of privacy from all this stuff. Mm-hmm. I think we can. I think people who want to make money will find ways of doing quite well within whatever framework we set up.
Michael,
we'll make money by charging us more for those services. So that's the direct trade-off we're going to face. I mean, does your caller want to spend $19.95 a month on Facebook or pay every time?
Well, you may not have the services.
Yes, I would.
And you have that right. Don't take it away from me. Don't take it away from me and everybody else who wants to have the ability to gain access to those services at a cheap price or no price.
Michael, I appreciate your call. Well said. And Adam, we've got your question. Jeffrey Rosen, do civilizations do this? Once you've got a kind of a set understanding, in this case, in our constitution of privacy and where we're protected, where we're not, do people turn around and just recreate it, readjust it?
At our best as Americans, that's what we've done throughout our history. Justice Brandeis has been invoked, as has Madison. Brandeis wasn't in favor of ending technology or paternalistically imposing values that were alien to the nation. He insisted on translating privacy so that Americans had precisely the same amount of protection against unreasonable searches and seizures in the age of wiretapping and the radio as they did at the time of the framing. So far from being faithless to the ideals of the framers, this project of constitutional translation is necessary, as even Justice Scalia has recognized in his inspiring dissenting opinions objecting to NSA surveillance to preserve privacy in the digital age. I would very much urge listeners to resist the simplistic dichotomies that Adam is drawing between completely forswearing these technologies or utterly allowing them. Madison insisted on the opposite. He was a moderate who recognized the dangers of unchecked power, but also thought that a powerful government was necessary to protect liberty. And broadly, I'm not, you know, proposing one text or another or trying to draft any laws. I'm suggesting that there are certain kinds of invasions that I'm positing all, you know, nearly all Americans, including, I'd imagine, Adam, just think are outrageous and shouldn't be permitted. And those are the ones that might be constitutionally prohibited, and we could maintain the Internet as it is otherwise. I think it's a very moderate proposal.
I wonder if it all works. It would require some reconceptualization, I think, of how the economics work here. But people are also looking at all the information that's now out there, and I think many are wondering. Marvin in Berea, Kentucky. Marvin, thanks for calling. You're on.
Yes. If we keep giving all of our legal rights away without regulations, what will hinder or eliminate the government from taking full control of everyone's private life, all the way down to religious beliefs, and will mandate certain things to happen by every individual, or they'll be killed?
Well, I mean, that puts it in really stark terms, but Adam, if you look at what's happened with the NSA and the PRISM program, from what we can see, an American citizen could reasonably be concerned that what you end up with is a large surveillance state coupled with a private sector that has an amazing amount of information, that working together kind of as a condominium. How does liberty stand up against that, Adam?
If the problem is governmental access to this information, including information that is collected by private entities, then the solution is more restrictions on the scale and scope of powers that the government has to commandeer that data and information. This is why we do have the Fourth Amendment, and we have other laws, ECPA and other laws, that basically govern what the government can collect from these companies and from us individually.
We failed so far, we didn't even know what they were doing until Snowden came.
We shouldn't give up on that. The answer to that can't be, we should therefore shut down the information economy as we know it, because we have a government power problem. The problem is government power. We should continue to redouble our efforts to solve that problem.
Vicki in Salem, Oregon. Vicki, you're on the air.
Yeah, I love Google and my iPhone, and Google is how I found this quote by Jefferson that says that we shall crush in its birth the aristocracy of our moneyed corporations, which dare already to challenge our government to a trial of strength and bid defiance to the laws of our country. I think they were very concerned about corporate power.
The founders concerned about corporate power, and of course that law developed a lot since the era of the founders. Well, Vicki, I appreciate your call from Oregon. I don't know. Adam, first to you. Do you not have any concern as private companies? You heard our doctor in Los Angeles saying they're going to know everything about your insides, man, and that's going to be out there in a national network.
Tom, many of these concerns are legitimate. There are many existing legal remedies that we haven't spent any time on here today. There are torts. There are various types of targeted privacy provisions. There are other types of mechanisms for the Federal Trade Commission that can basically go after really egregiously awful data practices or privacy violations. But a constitutional amendment restricting data flows along the lines of what Professor Rosen has suggested would shut down the information economy as we know it and take away our ability to enjoy all these wonderful informational riches that have been given to us in the digital age.
Jeffrey Rosen, why a constitutional amendment? Why not just tighten up the laws around this, make them good and tough, and do it that way?
You know, there are good ways of tightening up the laws, and certainly ending the so-called third-party doctrine that says that when I surrender information to Google, I've lost all expectation of privacy in it, would be a fine thing. But we've discussed the political pathologies in Congress that make it unlikely to find majorities. They're going to coalesce around these sort of laws. And it's my belief that the people do believe that there are certain kinds of invasions that are outrageous. Now, in practice, of course, constitutional amendments are very hard to pass. But we might have a situation where our legislators are less representative of the basic will of the people than the people of the United States themselves. And we're not talking about restricting data flows or cutting down the internet. Let's just keep stressing that. We're talking about drafting an amendment that will protect all Americans from the same kind of invasive and unreasonable surveillance that I think all of us understood. And the fact that the founders were concerned about monopoly power, believed that natural rights inherited in us from God, and basically constrained...
Jeffrey, I think we've got it. We're up against the clock. A robust debate is needed. I think we'll all agree with that. Jeffrey Rosen, George Washington University. Adam Thier, George Mason University. Thanks to you both. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.